Warning, this podcast discusses topics that are known to trigger those suffering from PTSD, depictions of sexual abuse, abuse of a child, and many other forms of trauma, as well as the results of such. Listener discretion is advised.
Misfits Motorsports was born out of a passion for racing and a deep commitment to supporting the veteran community. Transitioning out of the military can be one of life's toughest challenges, and finding a new sense of purpose can feel overwhelming. That's why Misfits Motorsports is dedicated to using the power of motorsports as a platform for meaningful change. At the heart of their mission is the 22 a Day initiative, a campaign that brings attention to the heartbreaking reality of veteran suicide. But they're not stopping at awareness. Misfits Motorsports is creating real opportunities for veterans to rebuild their sense of purpose, reconnect with others, and develop new skills that can change lives. And it's about more than just racing. Misfits Motorsports is about bringing people together. Veterans, their families, and supporters to create lasting opportunities that benefit everyone through programs like their Driver Development Program, Co-Driver Program, Pit Crew Program, and Mini Misfits Racing Team. Misfits Motorsports ensures that every role on and off the track is valued and supported. Whether it's mentoring a young racer, preparing vehicles for race day, or cheering each other on at the track, these shared experiences build strong bonds and foster a sense of belonging that extends far beyond the finish line. But the mission doesn't end at the track. Misfits Motorsports is building pathways for veterans to thrive in careers across industries like plumbing, electrical work, construction, sales, social media, and more. They're forging strong partnerships to ensure veterans have the tools, mentorship, and opportunities they need to succeed, not just for themselves, but for their families. Misfits Motorsports isn't just creating jobs. They're building a foundation for growth, support, and a community that veterans and their loved ones can count on. It's about racing with a purpose and driving change for those who've served. If you'd like to get involved or learn more about the amazing work Misfits Motorsports is doing, visit them at MisfitsMotorsportsLLC.com. Together we can make a difference for our nation's heroes. That's Misfits with a Z, MotorsportsLLC.com, or MisfitsPerformance.myshopify.com.
You did it again, Big Toe.
All right, guys, welcome to the third episode of the Ginger Veteran Podcast. I'm here with Sean. Just to kind of give you a little bit of backstory, for my first year out of the military, I worked at a place with Sean. We got to know each other very well, shared a lot of times that, we've gone through some trauma and we've talked about it a little bit. So I wanted to get Sean on the show here. Sean wanted to do an interview and kind of put his story out. So I'm going to pass it over to him real quick. Sean, would you please give a brief introduction?
Hey, my name is Sean. I part-time as Batman. I'm a little sick right now. I had a little horse in my throat, and of course I got it right before this little interview. But I'm a writer for now, hopefully an author. I like gothic stuff, Halloween stuff. I'm a part-time wizard. I have Halloween decorations up all years around. I enjoy crafting stories and playing D&D, nerdy stuff, you know, role-playing games, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's about it.
All right. So just want to make note, Sean said that he's playing the role of part-time Batman right now. He got a little sick. We didn't want to reschedule this interview. We wanted to get this done while we could. So, Sean, just want to jump into this thing. Just want to know, would you share your experience with getting help with your mental health?
Oh, yeah. So the state of mental health care right now, unfortunately, is really lacking. There's no good outlet for finding it. And when you do find it, it's poor. Like, I finally managed to find a therapist earlier this year. He was great. This is after 32 years of nothing. You know, and then finally he moved to another building and I can't find a replacement. And then he wants to be helpful, to be fair to him, loved him. But he gave me replacements, and all the replacements are like little rinky dink places with no focus on men's mental health care. They barely pick up the phone. One of the places was an equestrian club. I don't know if they had it around back. I don't know if they had the therapist around back, but they showed a bunch of horses. But you know, that experience was great with the doctor. Am I allowed to say his name on here?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Dr. Clyde Johnson. He's a great, great guy. But and he was fantastic to me. My first real good experience. But even like I said, it was temporary. It was I got in maybe February, and he moved offices mid-August. So yeah, it's a few months. But that got me a start on the track. But still, I feel like we should treat mental health care as important as physical health care, because it is tantamount, you know, it's the same thing. But yeah, seeking it has been a struggle and a journey that in and of itself has made me stronger, but I wish it wasn't there.
Yeah. You know, as I shared in my first two episodes, it took me quite a while to find a therapist that was right for me. Yeah. You know, and a lot of people, you know, there's a huge debate out there whether men's mental health should matter as much as, absolutely, you know, we want it to. 100%, I think it should.
Absolutely.
I, you know, my struggles through seeking mental health, you know, I saw 5, 6, 7, 8 therapists before I even settled on the one I'm with now. And, you know, she's just been awesome. She's been great. I've jumped around with these therapists. I'm on, I think, number 4 is where I finally settled at my 4th clinic, where I found a good therapist. So I understand your struggles on that one. I fully agree. Mental health should be top priority, because your mental health really affects your physical health.
Yeah, and I think far too often, and this may be just a take from me, but I think far too often we've conditioned men to not seek that help because it's like weakness, you know, like that, and it's not. It's not a weakness. If you break your leg and you can't walk anymore, people will be like, oh, no, you're weak. No, they see you have a broken leg. You know, if the same thing can happen to your head, it's the most complicated thing we know of.
Yeah. So exactly. So just kind of preface this question that I'm about to ask. So, you know, I know that I dealt with my internal demons 100%. So before I ask this question, you know, I'm just going to kind of touch on this a little bit. Internally, I felt I knew something was wrong, but I felt like I would just be shunned or, absolutely, you know, looked at as a weak man if I sought help. So I'll ask you, do you think being a man has made it harder for you to get help, both internal and external stigmas?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. Because mine in manifest, like, it's in my brain, obviously. It's emotional, it's mental. But like, I also have physical symptoms, like, you know, when I'm driving in a car, or, you know, any sort of thing that's constantly moving, my brain starts making up all the concocting all those things, and then I shake, you know, I physically shake. And people see that, and it makes it worse, because now I'm like, oh, I look stupid, you know, when I know it's not true. You know, I'm having a physical reaction. If you had a seizure from running lights or whatever, and you collapse on the floor, people would be like, oh, you know, they have whatever, I forgot what it's even called, those kind of seizures. But, you know, they'd be like, oh, it's a physical thing. Mine's mental, you know. And people are like, oh, you're weird. You know, that's a weird thing. And, I mean, not to me. I know what it is. But, you know, and then I'll be like, hey, you know, I don't feel going to, you know, people want me to go to a party, or, you know, go to a big thing and, you know, be out in public. And I'll be like, I don't really want to do that. And they're like, why? Well, why do you want to? Because when I get this, all the eyes are on me, you know, I start to, you know, and on the inside, I know, you know, hey, I'm just doing this thing. But on the outside, it looks, you know, strange to people who don't have it. And so, yes, absolutely. I believe physically and mentally, I've been mocked an innumerable amount of times. Like it's just been a, you know, I'm kind of a big guy too. So people kind of presuppose it, like, oh, you're going to, you know, you're just going to, you know, you're going to fight your way through. I mean, you kind of can't do that when your brain's shutting down on you, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been like, hey, sometimes I even shudder to tell people I go to a therapist. And the fact that that's a thing should not be. If you say, hey, I go to my doctor, people wouldn't be like, oh, you go to a doctor? You know?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I fully agree, man. Like, you know, just having the therapist that I have now, I mean, it has taken me 36 years to finally admit something's wrong.
Yeah.
It's taken me 2 years to find a therapist that I can work with. And I like to say that it's taken me 38 years to get to the point in my life where I'm at right now. You know, patience. Yeah. I would say patience is a virtue.
Yeah. And you know what? I heard something sometime. Sorry, I'm gonna quote it, but I'm not gonna have any idea who it was from because I just heard it off the ether. But strongest is the warrior who can fight his own mind. You know, it's not, and that's what it is. It's a battle. It's not like, oh well, just turn it on. Some people say, I said, well, just don't think about it that way. Oh, I never would have thought of it like that.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, I'm sure you've heard this. I know I've heard it a million times. Why don't you just get over it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fuck. That is a.
You solved it.
That's it, right? That is the Rubik's Cube of mental health. I'll just forget about it and not think about it.
I've fought this for 30 years and you've solved it in 2 seconds. I never thought about it like that.
So, you know, again, kind of going back to this, the stigma around men's mental health is really, it's real, whether people believe it or not. You know, people can debate it.
Yep.
People can argue with it. People can fight about it. But it does make it harder being a man because, you know, not only the external stigma where people are saying, hey, you know, you're a man, right? Come on, toughen up, right? Yep. Suck it up.
Oh, I got one on that one.
Yeah.
I got one on that one. Several, you know, we told you the you know, the therapists. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good.
But several therapists I've had in the past. I told my latest therapist, Dr. Clyde, I told him this, and he said, I apologize on behalf of my profession because I've had more than one therapist tell me, this is along a similar line, of you got a mom, you got a sister, you got a girlfriend, why don't you be tough for them? My brain's hurting, man.
Yes.
It ain't that easy. You know, I can be as, oh, both your arms are broken. You cut off both your arms. Well, why don't you lift those logs for your girlfriend? I mean, it ain't that easy, dog.
Yeah. And it happens, man. It happens all over. Now, you know, on the other side, there are plenty of people that don't stigmatize mental health and they're there for us and they show support. And that's great. But It's finding that fine line and separating the stigma from internal and external, right? Because once you've been told something so many times, it just kind of digs down into your brain and just stays there. It
sits there. Yeah.
And it just, it works against you.
Yeah, like, right? Stagnant water. It gets all nasty and dirty.
Yes, exactly. So have you had any mental health issues resulting from the stigma that is around men's mental health? And just to kind of, you know, talk about that a little bit, that's what we refer to as stacking issues. So stacking issues are, you know, you've got, like me, I'm diagnosed with bipolar 2, right? So I have mood swings, right? So, you know, I've been unmedicated for 36 years, 37 years, however long it was. So when I would have mood swings, it would be my fault 100% in everybody around me's eyes, right?
Yep.
And I think that caused a stacking issue because I was like, well, fuck, why can't I fix this?
Why can't I fix this?
Why can't I be better for you?
It's the right? Exact same experience.
Yeah. So, just kind of talk about your mental health issues resulting from the stigma and what kind of stacking issues you've had.
Yeah, I've, it's funny because I had the exact same issues in my early 20s where I would get angry all of a sudden. I never had that diagnosed, but you know, like officially, because again, that's another issue. It is what it is. I'll fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'd get angry out of nowhere, and I'd be physically violent, you know, like, and that ain't me, you know. As my therapist said, you know, does that conform to are you acting in accordance with who you are as a person, who you want to be as a person, like where you are? And I have to say no, because I don't want to be that mad. But it's I didn't do this right. I didn't do that right. I didn't do this right. And I've been, it is what it is, four times in a row now. I'm on my fifth one, and I'm ready to explode.
Yes.
Someone says something wrong, or, you know, just slightly wrong. You know, we actually put that over there. Boom. I'm mad. I'm raw. And then, you know, the next thing you know, they're like, oh, he just gets mad all the time. He just gets mad all the time. Like, No, I don't. It's just, there's this. I've got so much stuff buried in that stagnant water we're talking about that it's dredging up now. Now I'm kicking up the water. Now it's everywhere. And now people are covered in it, and they're like, well, this guy sucks. And then, yes, that makes it worse, because now I'm like, damn, people think I suck, but I'm not like this. And, you know, I've tackled all kinds of different ways to get around that, but I'll let you continue.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, when we look at these stacking issues, and we look at the people around us that are saying, oh man, this guy's just got a piss poor attitude, right? He doesn't want to do anything. He's lazy. No, I'm in a slump, right? And this is not who I am. And, you know, people who know me and who've been around me, they know that my mental health issues do not define me, right?
Exactly.
People who really actually take the time to get to know me. But there's those people that they don't care to take the time. They don't want to be bothered with it. It's easier for them to say, that guy's an asshole. Exactly. I'm going to move on with my life, right? So when you have these stacking issues, how do you handle the increase of issues from that? Even if you didn't handle it well, what is your body and mind's response to that?
See, at first I would tell people, hey, you know, when I was 24, 25, I'd tell people, hey, you know, I'd repress it. I'd say something like, angry is my thing. That's my thing. You know, that's my aesthetic. That's, you know, I'm the angry guy, right? And you know, that's cool, you know, to be like that. You know, and you know, I lift weights, I worked out, you know, and then, you know, I realized that, you know, the 50th time in a row, that didn't make me any happier, because now people know me as the angry guy.
Yeah.
That's not true. That's a repression.
Yes.
I've thrown up a smoke screen, and now people don't see me as the real, because the real me is chill as hell. I like to chill out. And in fact, I see myself a lot of times being like, hey, that guy needs to chill out, and then I'll explode later. And there's two different things that I don't know, that other guy could be going through something too. That's another thing we need to think about, is what other people are going through. But anyway, then I started thinking about things differently. I started thinking about, there was a magical switch, and I don't want to call it magical because that's too much, but it's a start, where I started telling people, hey, this is what this is. I started explaining to people, hey, there's like a thing. I didn't know what to call it at the time, but I was like, hey, there's something in my brain, and it's stacking up. Right? It's like a stacking issue, and it's making me do this. So when I do it, just ignore me. And you know, in mine in particular, if you do ignore me, it goes away way faster, because I can process it. But if I see you reacting, then it makes it worse. But when I started doing that, I found that a lot of people would be like, oh, I didn't know about that. And then just them knowing about it made it better. So to answer the question, repress for a long time, make it my aesthetic for a long time. And then I started, you know, embracing this sort of, you know what, this is a problem. This is something that isn't me. And it's caused by external stimuli, you know, the external, internal, but you know what I mean? External, it's not me doing it. You know, so once I've started going down that road, I've found that I've been able to control it a lot better. And I think it's what a lot of men need to think about. Hey, is this me? Is this who I want to be for the people around me? And I think once you get there, and you get to that point where you're like, no, and you know, I need to tell them. And I think that's the starting point. That's when things started getting better.
Yeah.
Is that crucial? Because it made me feel better, and it made the people around me acknowledge it, and then that made me feel even better.
Yeah.
So I started, in other words, stacking in the other direction.
Yes. I mean?
Yeah. So yeah, climb my way back out, get out of stagnant water.
And it's great when you get that validation,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's the validation. So, that's the word for it.
Yes. So when you get that validation and somebody says, I see you, I see your issues.
Yes.
Man, the weight that just comes off your chest right then.
It feels like a weight.
Yeah. It's phenomenal, right?
It feels like you're laying with three or four cinder blocks on your chest and they just start pulling them off and you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
You can breathe. You know,
I can breathe. I feel like I'm not free yet, but I can start this battle.
There's the light. And then the crucial thing is the anger, at least for me, stopped happening as much. So it was like telling people that the anger is going to happen made it happen less.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, to kind of touch on that a little bit, not necessarily people walking on eggshells around you, but people knowing and being able to identify either triggers or responses from you, right? That really helps people around us. To that point, when I started therapy with the therapist that I finally found, I learned a lot of self-coping mechanisms, right?
As did so I, yes.
You learn about grounding techniques, and, you know, people think that, you know, a lot of this stuff is just, and if you can do that, you can just get over it, right?
Yeah, it's
not. And that's not the case.
Not the case.
Right?
The case.
So, you know, my wife, when I told her about all the grounding techniques that I had learned and I was going to start trying to put those in practice, you know, one thing that she committed to doing was saying, hey, show me what these look like, right?
That's excellent mindset.
When I'm looking at them, when something's happening and I'm looking at you doing that in real time, she said, I know that I need to let you do your thing, right?
Fantastic. Grade A.
Yeah. That way you can bring yourself back down and we can continue on with nobody can see me do this, but air quotes, normal life.
Yeah,
right?
Normal life. Yeah.
Normal life.
Yeah. Mindfulness was mine. The kind of complex PTSD I have causes derealization where I start to like, everything seems fake. And that's a description they use, but it's almost impossible to describe. It feels like it's a pane of glass right in front of your eyes, and you're looking at the world through it, and you're watching it like a character from a first person shooter walk around, but you're it.
Yeah.
And mindfulness is, you know, you're getting from point A to point B. You're going to the car, you go to work, you get from the car to work, and then you do work, and you go back to the car, and then you go back to bed. You know, that's just, and you're watching it on a screen. Everything's boring.
Yeah.
Everything's blasé. You know, or terrifying is either one. It's it can be either because, you know, that's great.
Yeah.
But mindfulness was a technique that Dr. Clyde taught me, and once again, it seems like it's the most. Why don't you just get over it then? But it's look at that tree over there, and like look how many leaves it has. Watch it move, and then what do you smell in the air? What's the air smell like? And then you know what color is that table?
Yeah,
and you know, and then you, and it's a, from what I've heard, it's a very similar to grounding. Grounding is the two or three things you can touch, two or three things you can feel, two or three, you know, the sea, but grounding, you know, grounding is like its brother. It's like what does it smell like? You know,
yes,
and you immerse yourself. And I was coming back from a therapy appointment. I'll never forget it. I was coming back from a therapy appointment, and I passed by a Freddy's or something. It was some sort of fast food restaurant. Sorry. And I rolled down the window. There's like a little dog park there. And I looked at the dog and I saw its like dirty brown fur. And I was like, that's a pretty color. And then I smelled the fries. And then I felt the air. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Those are feelings. And I was like, whoa. And you don't know they're gone.
Yeah.
Until you experience them again. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Where they been?
Yes.
You thought they've been there the whole time. But, you know, they come back and you're like, that's what fries smelled like. This is what air, when I was a kid and I was playing out in the yard, that's what the air felt like when it hit me. The wind felt like, I was, you know, and then the leaves would rustle. And I noticed that too. And I was like, oh, this is what needs to happen. This is what I need to practice.
Yes.
And to get good at that. And you know, and then with mindfulness, Dr. Clyde was big into Buddhist stuff. And I am too, because I think they have some spectacular ways of thinking about things. And one of the things he taught me about my anger and my anxiety was another thing about mindfulness. And he said, you can be mindfulness in your head too, right? And you sort of have to actually be real. You can be sitting in a car seat and, you know, you start feeling that shake. Come on. You start feeling that, oh, I need to get out. And then you go into your mind and you're like, okay, that anger, that whatever you're feeling, or you're sitting in a stream, you're enjoying the air. you feel all those things, right? The trees and all that stuff. And then that anger is a leaf on the pond or the lake or the river, and it's drifting by. You see it, you acknowledge it, it's there. You're looking at it, but it's just a leaf. It can't hurt you. You just let it go, and then it goes off down the river. You can't see it no more. It's gone. And I was having one of those panic attacks in a car in a little Knoxville, a bunch of stuff going on. And I didn't close my eyes because I was driving, but
probably not safe.
It's not safe. I was just like, this is a leaf. It's going. And my whole back was shaking. I was just like gripping the wheel, and I was, I'm death rattling. And then the leaf went around the corner. I was like, oh, it never can hurt me. And it's gone. And here's the way I described it to the doctor. And he said it was great. He was a great, great description. Not to pat myself on the back, but he said, I'm not aiming to repress it, to press it down and smash it in. You're letting it out like steam. It's off of you. It's not like you're smashing it.
Yes.
And that's what it felt like. And then ever since then, I've been able to sort of turn that valve on the back of your neck. It starts shaking up to my head. Goes down. And I think that's a spectacular skill that I really think we need to encourage everyone, specifically a lot of men, like you were saying, who are stigmatized to this sort of thing. It's not weak to do that. You are a warrior battling your mind.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's, that a lot of people overlook that, right? You know, mental health is something that's been really, really pivotal in our society for years. And, I feel like while we are improving, we could always be better, right?
Exactly.
We could always be better at everything. So grounding and mindfulness sound kind of like the same. For grounding, it's using your five senses, your smell, your sight, your touch, your taste. You're using all these senses to kind of bring yourself back into reality because you're right, with PTSD, which I suffer from PTSD from childhood trauma. My PTSD is a little different. The way I would describe my symptoms are when I have an episode of PTSD, it's like I leave my body.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I'm not where I am in the present, right?
Yes.
It's like I leave my body and then I can see my childhood self and my whatever the situation is, right?
Yes.
And these memories that are coming to me as like a cartoon. Right.
Yeah, because that's how you felt at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're coming to me as a cartoon and I'm like, this didn't even happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
this isn't real. This never even happened. And as I watch, my brain starts unlocking that Pandora's box of repressed memories.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, that did happen.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And if you don't have any of these skills that therapy can help you with, or, something that you find that can bring you up and balance you out, right? If you don't have that, you lose yourself inside that vision.
You're gone.
Yeah. And people don't understand, well, if you're lost in the vision, why are you so angry? Because that's my reality, right? That vision is my reality at the time. And I go into a defensive mode.
Yeah, it's defensive. Absolutely.
And my defensive mode is getting angry at the person in front of me. Right. I'm not doing it on purpose. I'm not doing it because the person standing in front of me is my worst enemy. Right. And, a lot of people just don't understand how a lot of this stuff works. Right.
And there's a little kid inside you where you were younger and he's like, why is this happening to me? Except it's 30 years later.
Yes.
Because I remember I had this recurring dream and therapy brought this out and it was like, whoa, I couldn't believe it. I had this recurring dream where I was a little kid in my bed, cartoonish again, the cartoonish visuals, and I jumped out of my bed like I always did on Saturday morning, and I plopped on the ground, I grabbed my PlayStation controller, turn it on, and then something from under the bed grabs me by the shoulders and starts shaking me. Finally, I could feel it. I had this dream until I was 18, something like that, but it would just shake me. And I would wake up because I was being grabbed by the back of the throat and throttled, and I was like, man, that's a weird dream. That sucks. And then I was in therapy and I told him about that. He asked me about something like that. He's like, what kind of memories? And I was like, I don't know how it even came up because, it's a dream.
Yeah.
But it managed to get out of the ether. And he goes, tell me more about that. We started exploring it. And he's very deft. He was just sort of, you know, well, tell me more about that. What, where, you know, where were you? You know, what was in front of you? And I was describing it. And then it smacked me in the face. And it was literally like a smack in the face. Like I didn't move or react, but it was a smack. I was like, that was my stepdad choking me. That was my stepdad choking me because I'd said something to my mom stupid when I was five or whatever, which most people, when well-adjusted people, when a five-year-old says something dumb, you go, don't do that.
Yes.
He thought to wake me up in the middle of shaking me. And then I could see it vivid as day. I could see my dinosaur bed, my little catcher's mitt baseball lamp, and him just throttling me. And like, and I'm just like, I'm sitting there, you know, I'm crying, I'm throttled back and forth. And I was like, that dream was my mind trying to conceptualize that differently, yes. Which is defensive.
Yes.
It's trying to say, no, it was a monster under the bed in a dream. It wasn't one of your loved ones attacking you.
Yes.
And you're a child.
Yes.
You know, and this, and like I said, what you were saying before, stigmatizing, that wasn't your fault. It never was.
Yeah.
That was what happened to you.
Yeah.
And your brain is trying to defend you from it. And your brain loves you sometimes. Your brain loves you. So it's trying to fight to come up with something. And that's where you get that defensive. That's where you get that. That's where you get that. You know, the doctor said that when, you know, when I have that anxiety attack, those anxiety attacks, those panic attacks, when my hands come up, he says, that's a defensive gesture. You're trying to block your face. You may not think about it, but you're coming up like this. You're blocking your face. It may be a car. So you're not going to stop an oncoming car that way, but your brain is like, do something.
Yeah.
And other people, you know, that are around you may not understand that, but it is absolutely in your brain, you're being attacked. You may be on a bus, but in your brain, you're fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with myself, you know, as I've mentioned in these last two episodes, a lot of my core memories were blocked out, right? Yes. You know, I look back at some of the things in my childhood and I'm like, man, that was amazing. You know, yeah. That was just great. But then the sad reality is that these little moments that I have are just, they have a shadow cast over them.
Yes.
From what I went through as a child. You know, and I'm learning in therapy that, you know, that's not it anymore.
Yeah.
Right. I'm,
yeah.
I'm safe. Yes, I'm grown. I'm safe. You know?
Yeah.
And I think one of the most powerful things I've ever heard was, you have now grown into the person that would have protected you as a child.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for bringing that up, because that's a quote I was trying to dig up. But that is it. You are the person that became that way despite what happened.
Yes.
My dad was both my stepdad and my dad were both a little rough. But my dad, he had all these things that now I would hate. But he was like sort of, you know, he's my dad. I loved him. So like, you know, it had been very easy for me to turn into someone just like him.
Yeah.
Right. It had been very easy to turn into sort of like womanizer, you know, like this drunkard womanizer on drugs that does all this, you know, that's physically abusive to the son or whatever. But like, no. I am me despite all that. I am powerful.
Yes.
Enough where that couldn't even affect me. I've beaten it. I've come out on the other side. Well, I'm not beating it yet, but we're working on it.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm not that. I'm sitting here right now on a podcast talking about men's mental health. My dad would have called me. Can I curse?
Yeah.
My dad would have called me a pussy bitch 1,000 times. There was a time. It's one of my favorite stories because it's just indeed that I think it was the time. The reason that's stuck in my brain, like you were saying about, you know, all these things you have where you bring these core memories. This was the moment I was like, my dad's a prick. Was we were putting a quad runner on a trailer, and I'm 12, 13 maybe, and the, you know, those bungee straps, they get taut, really. And I'm pulling it over, and he's pulling it, he's a big construction man, you know, pulls it over, and I'm on my side, I'm still doing it, and I hit it, and the other one comes off, and it swings and smacks me in the finger. That shit could have chopped my finger off.
Yeah.
And it hits me, and all I did was shake my hand and go, ow. That's all I did. Literally all I did. I went, ow. Cause I think there was a thing in my brain that told me if you reacted like a normal kid would, or a normal young girl, he'd attack you. So I was like, okay, all I'm going to do, you know, all this isn't happening. I'm not actively thinking this, but in my brain. So all I'm going to do is go, ow. And he comes around the corner of the truck with this like disappointed face. He's like, you fucking pussy.
Yeah.
And I was just like, and that was the moment I was just like, what do you want me to do? Yeah. You know, if I get hit by a car, you're going to call me a bitch?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, exactly. Exactly. You know, I mentioned this in the previous episodes, but, you know, my stepdad was my role model, right? He was my male figure in my life. He was always running out, running the roads. I mean, he would be gone for 3 and 4 days at a time, obviously picking up whatever he could get a hold of, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, he was just very abusive and very, very physically, mentally, emotionally abusive to my mom, to me. Luckily, you know, I caught the brunt of the abuse. My little brothers didn't really get to experience that, which, you know, I wouldn't change that for the world. Right. Yeah. But, you know, there was this thing that he would do, and you know, your pressure points behind your ears here.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
The funny story is I can no longer feel that. Right. I can put all the pressure behind my ears that I want. And it's like, it's numb. It's like the nerves are dead. So kind of the same thing that you were talking about. When I would be sitting there playing video games or something, I would have my setup in the floor, right, in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Got my little, you know, TVs weren't as big back then,
little
right?
CRT. So
I got my little 15-inch TV, yeah, with my little PlayStation 1, right?
Flickery
just,
color.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm just sitting there playing my game, and he would just come up behind me, and he would take his thumbs, and he would bury them behind my ears, and he would lift my body in the air. And he would just hold me like that. And I'm 12, 13 years old, right? And I'm at the mercy of this 250-pound dude,
yeah,
who's just literally holding me in the air by my pressure points. And I'm just spouting tears, right? I am uncontrollably screaming, crying. And there was no mercy shown. None at all, right? And now, you know, like I said, the funny part is what I call the funny part, because my humor is like my coffee, right? It's dark and strong.
Just a super dark.
but, you know, the funny part that I say now is I know for a fact that he couldn't do it today,
yeah,
because I can't feel it. Yeah. So if he tried to do it, I'm numb from it.
Yeah. Mine's very similar. My dad didn't do that, but, and I'm so sorry about that experience, brother, but, my dad didn't do that, but his favorite was noogies. He thought it was so funny. Like he'd get shit-faced, and he thought noogies were the funniest thing. And he's, you know, construction guy, you know, and I'm like 10-year-old playing with my Legos, and he'd just come by and he'd say headlock, then noogie. He'd go headlock, and he would just grab me and off the ground, and he'd just carry me like that, and then noogie, and it was painful. It felt like blades in my forehead, and I've got like dents up there.
Yeah.
And you know, now, like I said, I've you know, and I think that part of this may have influenced my lifting weights and stuff like that. If my dad tried to do that shit, he's not as big as I am now. If he tried to do that shit, I would throw him down the stairs.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's not like, and that's the other thing too, is we're not like violent men. We're like, no, we're not letting you do this to us anymore.
Yeah.
And that's where the defensive, like if we're talking about it being defensive. I don't want to go back and grab my dad and throw him up the stairs with a headlock. But if you try to do it, I would.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you inflicted this on a child.
Yes.
On a child who couldn't defend themselves.
Yes.
I'm not a child anymore.
Yes, exactly. And 100%.
I've become who I am despite you.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, and I don't know, it's the way people are raised or whatever. You know, again, the word stigma cannot be used enough,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Some people would look at that as playful behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be, right? Yeah. It could be. You could grab somebody gently in a headlock, and you could just gently rub their head, the top of their head, right? And noogie, right? Yeah. And that's playful. But when somebody grabs you to the point to where you can feel the pressure on your throat, and then they put their fingers so deep into your scalp that your skull and brain can simultaneously feel the pain,
mm-hmm,
that's not playful behavior, man.
No.
That's intentionally trying to hurt someone.
You lifting your son off the ground and dragging him like that. But, you know, the a real man, and that's the kind of people that we're, you know, I strongly believe we're growing into be, would be like, would do that once, playful, like the playful and the gentle one with their son. And you know, if they enjoy it, keep doing it. You know, they laugh and keep doing it. And they come and punch you in the, you know, chest lightly. You know, you're but if they're like, you know, that hurts me. Like, oh, no, I did not mean to do that, son. I'm just messing around. I'm sorry. Never do it again.
Yes.
It's so simple. It's brain dead. and some people can't figure it out.
Yeah, and you know, some like you just said, the biggest thing that I want to take from that is the fact that apologies to our children yes. is also stigmatized, yes. right? Yeah. People, I shouldn't have to apologize to my child because I'm the fucking parent, yeah. right? Yeah. No. That's not how it works, yeah. right? When I have episodes and I have angry outbursts towards my children, immediately, if not immediately, I have to come down off of my situation, right? I will apologize to them because they don't deserve it, yeah. Yeah. right? They're not the ones who hurt me. They're not the ones I should be taking it out on.
Exactly. And I don't know if you feel the same way because I know I do. Whenever I do apologize, I don't have any kids, but I do the same thing to my friends or anybody I do that to. I come down really as fast as I can. I come down. I don't repress, but I come down. I'm still mad. And you can share that. You can say, hey, I'm still mad, but, you know, and I apologize. That makes me feel better instantly.
Yes.
I always say the other day, it's my favorite catchphrase, but this was 2 years ago. I was driving with my friends and this guy cut me off. And I was just like, there was a bunch of stuff happening that day. It was stressful. So I was just like, hit the gas. I didn't do what my dad would do. I hit the gas. I fought him behind this guy. So I started following him. I was about to roll down the window. And my friend got uncomfortable. He goes, I see him react. He leans back. And he's like, whoa, because I started going so fast. Instantly. I was like, no, this isn't the man I am. That's not who I am. And I slowed down, calmed down. I was like, hey, I turned to him. I was like, I'm really mad. That made me really mad. It hit me someplace deep. Made me mad. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that to you. I really didn't. You know, we're going to go and do this thing. And we're going to have fun. And he's like, hey, it's okay. It's okay. Instantly, I was less mad. Him being accepting that apology and the validation we talked about earlier,
yes.
it was, there goes the steam lever again. Steam's off. Because now I know I can beat this because I just did.
You yes.
know, I just did. And the person who was affected by it realized, oh yeah, it's not that big a deal. He gets like that sometimes. It's not his fault. And both those things together, like a lever, is off.
Yeah,
it's gone. And then learning that is something you can package up. You can put it in a box like a tool. You carry it with you, and then you can use that everywhere you go. The other day, it's not exactly the same related story, but you said you apologize to your kids. The same thing can go the other way around. People can apologize to us whenever they trigger us. And when I was starting to go to therapy, I told Rachel, my girlfriend, I told her, you know, hey, this is how these things are. You know, I'm going to therapy. I can articulate this to you. And I told her about it. I was like, hey, you know, these things trigger me. These things, yeah, I get uncontrollably angry and I can't stop it. And one morning, I won't go too much into details, but she had said something that it just caught me the wrong way. She was in a bad mood too. And I was trying to assuage her. I was like, you want to do the thing? And then she just snapped back at me. And that just, it wasn't like a yelling or anything like that. It was just something, you know, cockeyed. It was just something, you know, it hit me right. And I was just like, I got really mad. I was like, okay, I don't want to do this around her. So I left. But she could see I got mad. You know, it was visceral. And I left. And then I was like, I can't believe I messed up again. You know, I started going internal. I started beating myself up again. I had to start fighting my way out. Once again, the strongest warrior is the one who beats his own mind.
Yeah.
I started fighting my way out. And then she came up to me later and she put her hand on her shoulder and goes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk to you that way. I know how that makes you feel. Boom. It's over. Yeah. The lever's left off. I know that she didn't mean it. She's in a bad mood too. We've just articulated. You know, it's like the opposite of those damn movies you see where no one talks to each other. So
yeah.
that the whole problem is like keeps getting compounded because no one just says the thing. It's like the real world version of that, you know. And I was eternally grateful. My lovely girlfriend shut that down. I went and told the therapist about that. He goes, "Excellent. That's exactly what you should have done." Excellent.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people, again, don't think about that. Don't realize it. Don't care to realize it. You know, there's different things. Again, everything's up for debate. Everything's subjective, right?
Yeah.
I can sit down in front of somebody and say, "Hey, you don't care about people with mental health issues," and they could say, "No, I do care. I just don't have the time to express it." Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, like I said, it's subjective. Right. So I will say that, you know, some of my outbursts or, you know, the times that I've had issues with my spouse is, you know, she'll without doing anything. Right. It'll just be situations at home because I have children. I have my wife. So to me, that picture is painted as my childhood because I see my kids
yes.
and I'm like, man, I want to do better for my kids. Right. but something could happen with her and the kids, and I could be like, oh, man, that reminds me so much of when I was a kid, and I don't like it, right? I don't like it at all. And, you know, where you're talking about communication is key, sometimes I can't communicate that, right?
Yes.
And, you know, there are different reasons, fear of what's going to happen, fear of the unknown, you know, not really wanting to interject because I feel like, well, this isn't my childhood, so I just need to back off, right?
Yeah, and that's the stigma. A stigma coming up.
Exactly. And that's the internal stigma, right? And, you know, it compounds itself because once that happens, then you're looking for it, right?
Yeah.
So you saw something that reminded you of your childhood, and now it's like, well, what else do they do, right?
Yeah.
And you just kind of lean up in your chair, and you kind of get all excited because now you're playing detective, right?
Yeah.
And you're looking around at your life, and you're like, how does this remind me of my shitty childhood that I don't want to revisit, but I have to revisit because now I feel like I'm the protector, right?
Yes.
So I'm the one currently in an internal struggle, but I feel like I have to protect everybody from going through what I went through. And that causes problems, right?
Yes.
So communication is key.
Communication is key. And let me tell you, we were talking about earlier, I always love to bring this up because it's my favorite point to poke. If mental health is physical health, if they're interchangeable, that protector, you're mentally protecting. You're up here. And you're like, I want to stop everything bad that happened to me when I was a kid.
Yes.
And your kids don't know it right now. You know, or maybe they might feel really, really, you know, intellectual, but you know, that is the same as them going, Dad, thank you for protecting us from that bear.
Yes.
Or, you know, that because that's to you, that's the same.
Yes.
And you know, if someone comes out at you with a knife and you're like, no, you will not get my kid. You smash his head into a wall. And that's the same as you know, you're like, you're looking out, you know, whatever it could be, but you're like looking, What thing can I stop from happening that would nullify this trauma that I have?
Yes.
Because I feel it and they're not gonna.
Yes.
And I think, once again, warrior fights his own mind. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I want to end this interview with kind of asking how you're doing now. It seems like, you know, we've touched a lot on therapy and it really seems like both of us are really working at this.
Oh,
and.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I like to tell people and I like to make sure that people understand is it's a battle every day. It's not a war, right? Yes. You have to win battles. You're never going to win this war, right?
Because you gain ground.
You gain ground and you get better and you infiltrate a lot better, but you never physically fully win the war. You always have that stuff that's now a part of you. Right.
Yes. And earlier I caught myself, if you remember, because I said, I beat this. And I was like, no, I didn't beat it. We're working on it.
Yes.
But because I want to say that, right?
Yes.
That's what wants to come out of my mouth. I beat this thing. I'm on the other side.
Yeah.
But you won't ever get there. But you can get as close as you can to that man you want to be. And you can live the happiest, best life you can. And like you said, battles. You gain the ground. But it's an infinite field.
Yes.
It keeps on going. But at the end of it, you can be like, hey, look how much I gained.
Yep.
It's farther than the eye can see. You're shielding the sun. It's going on. But on your question, how am I doing now? I think I'm doing spectacularly. I think my own mission, because I have literally that steam valve that I've been able to master that. Like there are times where it comes on. And I'm like, before I'd be like, oh, here it comes. And I can feel it in the back of my spine, all the way at my back. I'm like, oh, here it comes. I'm afraid because my dad used to drive really fast. He used to go down hills and it would freak me out. And there'd be all that jangling from his toolboxes and all that stuff. And I was afraid he was going to hit me. And I'm just like, but it's not there now. I'm in my own car. If I want to slow down, I can. I can hit the guy. I can hit the brake. I can pull in this parking lot over here and cool down for a minute if I want. And just the knowledge of doing that, there goes that valve. Because it's I know I'm in control now. And I know it's a mental ailment. Once again, physical, mental, tantamount though. It's a mental ailment that I'm dealing with, much like a broken leg, broken finger, you know, head trauma or whatever. But like, I know I can fix it. I can pull that bandage and wrap it around if I need to, because if it's bleeding or whatever. Because I'm running the ship.
Yes.
They're not running the ship anymore. I'm running the ship.
Yes.
And the way I run the ship is with compassion and kindness. Kindness
is the language the blind can see and the deaf can hear.
Yes.
And you have to be kind to yourself, you know, before you can be kind to others, you know, and I think that's the direction I'm going. And, you know, like I was saying, this journey, it kind of started, if I can go off on a little bit of a tangent here.
Yeah.
Towards the beginning when I said I'm a writer, we play, me and my friends play RPGs, dice RPGs, the super nerdy kind, the OG. I'm the dungeon master, the game master, depending on the game we play. And I designed this character one time, and as I'm writing him, it sounds stupid, but as I'm writing him, it started changing the way I thought about stuff because he was a Buddhist monk. We were playing a Japanese mythology game. And I made this Buddhist monk who was a killer, was.
Yeah.
And he had nothing to do with, he wasn't a monk at all. He was just an assassin. He was a hired killer. He'd, you know, strangle people with, you know, he'd grow up people and all this bad stuff. And then one day he realized something. He came to Satori, the sudden realization of something. And then he started thinking about it differently. And to write this Satori, and that's when the characters meet him, is after he's had that, and that's when he becomes the monk. To write this, I started looking up stuff. And some of the stuff that they talked about in some of this tantric Buddhism stuff, it's just like they would mention like everything, the gamut. You think it's like, oh, be, you know, don't eat anything and don't sleep and sit on a mountaintop under a waterfall. But it's a lot of stuff. It's just like, be sexually happy. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. There's a story about Buddha where a guy's daughter is being taught by Buddha. They're in a meditation circle and they're all meditating. He's teaching lessons. And the guy comes down and goes, "You will not teach my daughter this crap," and spits on him. And then he goes back home. And he thinks about it all night. He's like, "I just spit on that guy," and all he did was smile. And, you know, I feel really bad. He comes out. He goes to the Buddha and he says, "Listen, I'm sorry that happened." And he goes, "I don't accept your apology." And the guy's like, "You don't accept my apology?" He goes, "No, because I'm not mad at you in the first place. I can see why you're angry. I've already forgiven you. I've forgiven you from the very second that spit hit my face." And I was just like, "Oh." Yeah. And I got hit with the Satori that my character did. I was just like, "Oh." And I was like, you know, kindness comes from within, from without.
Yeah.
Be kind to yourself. It comes in. And then you can push it out.
Yes. 100%.
And then ever since then, I've just had this like chill, you know, the same sort of that defensive, put your fist up in front of your face when someone comes at you. That's diminished. You know, going back to the, how am I doing now? The other day, I won't name any names, but once again, the other day comes up. It's just like 6 months ago. But I got work. I came back then. I was like, I'm chilling, you know. I'm doing better, feeling better. You know, I'm starting on this road. I'm starting where I am now. I was sort of, that's the track I was taking back then to get here. And I came back there to look for something. And he just turned to me and he started ripping into me. He's like, "I'm busy and I can't do anything." He just starts slamming me. And then I'm like, "Okay, all right." And then, you know, immediately in my head, I'm like, "Okay, I gotta get I started getting angry. I didn't do anything. And, you know, just the same kind of things I would say to, you know, in my head, about my stepdad and my dad. And then I was like, "I didn't do anything. I didn't. It's all him. And he's having a bad day."
Yes.
And he was just yelling at me, throwing things, busting boxes and smashing things. And I was just like, "I didn't do anything about this. I didn't do anything to start this. I came back here doing my job and I did so politely. And I asked him with a smile on my face and made a little joke beforehand. I didn't do anything." And then I was like, "I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything then. I didn't do anything now. And I'm conforming with the man I want to be. And the man I want to be right now is the one who goes, okay, he's having a bad day, man. It's not that big a deal." And so I didn't. We found the thing. I walked out of the cooler. And then someone had seen that happen. And I'd come up to my girlfriend. And they said, "Oh, yo, he tore into him." And then Rachel came and found me. She was all worried. You know, she was like, "You know, I heard you." And I was like, "Yeah, he did. He's having a bad day." And she was like, "I thought you'd be like ruined." I was like, "I didn't do anything." And yes. I said that with full confidence, the confidence I just said it right now. But inside my brain, I was just like jumping around like a giddy school kid. So I was just like, "Yeah, I did." But because you know, on the outside, I'm just like, "Yeah, didn't do anything." But on the inside, I'm just like, "Yes, this is what I've been trying to do for so long. I've been trying to acknowledge this because it doesn't come naturally."
Yes.
To people who like, because it's always, you know, go ahead, you know, the perfect story for this. 4th of July, I was like 9. My friends are outside enjoying fireworks. And I was there, but it just so happened the 4th of July fell on my custody weekend with my dad, and my friends are outside, you know, blowing up all kinds of fireworks. They're fucking blowing up the neighborhood. And I was like, I want to go over there and enjoy that. So, and my dad decided that was the night he was going to do some stupid, you know, project around the house. And he had a big, big, huge dog, big, giant German Shepherd. Don't mean to say it with venom. I love that dog, but, you know, that's not where the story's going. he's wrestling with the dog. He's fighting. You can hear him yelling at the dog. I kind of like yells at me. And I'm like, okay, I'm a little kid. And every single time, I said, hey, I'm going over here. He goes, I don't care. You know, he'd be like, why are you telling me? But you're bothering me. So I said, okay, let's walk out. Because he's taught me for 5-6 years that, you know, don't bother me. I'm doing something.
Yes.
So I walked out, got fireworks, played for 2 or 3 hours. We burned all the fireworks, had a great time. Almost set myself on fire. That was great. I still have the jacket with the hole in it. Came back, and he'd finished what he was working on. And he said, I almost choked the dog to death. It was your fault. He said that just like that. He pointed at me. It would have been your fault. No, it wouldn't have.
Yeah.
You choked the dog because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You told me not to warn you, so I didn't warn you. And I wouldn't enjoy time with my friends. If you would have choked the dog, it would have been your fault. But as a kid, ruined me.
Yes.
I almost killed the dog. Almost killed the dog.
Yes.
No, you didn't, Sean. You did not almost kill the dog.
Yes.
Your dad almost killed the dog and blamed it on you.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of digs into, you know, I want to touch on something you said real quick about it coming naturally, right? So for anybody, it doesn't actually come naturally. When you're a child, that's your time to get your molding, right?
Yes.
And you know, the way you get molded affects the chemical reactions in your brain.
Yes.
Right. And I'm not a doctor. You know, you're not a doctor.
No, certainly not.
We're not professionals. We can't speak on this.
A couple idiots.
Yeah, we're a couple idiots just talking on a podcast. But you know, we've experienced this, and we know firsthand what it feels like. And I can say that when I was a child, I had a lot of problems dealing with my emotions because, I mean, I was molested by my uncle. You know, so I never really learned how to deal with that because in my home, the stigma was if you have sexual intercourse with a man, you're gay, right? And, you know, homosexuality had its own stigma in the world, right?
Yeah.
It still does. And, you know, we're still working through it. We're making leaps and bounds, right? It's it's a war that you'll never win, but you can win those battles and you can win the ground. But, you know, a lot of that weighed on me, and I didn't want to. And, of course, my molester was like, oh, if you tell anybody, we'll both get in trouble. I didn't want to get in trouble for this. Yeah. I didn't enjoy doing it. I damn sure didn't want to get in trouble for it, right?
Again, a lie
to mold
the child.
Exactly. And you know, when you're dealing with these things on your own as a child, you're dealing with them how you feel comfortable, right? So what did I do? I took that experience and I cut it off and I blocked it out and I said, I'll forget about it one day, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And you know, I didn't tell anybody about that until I was 25 years old, and I told my now wife. She was the first person I told. And I don't know why I told her. I don't know what brought it on. We were just actually laying down having a casual conversation, and something on me, my heart was just like, tell her.
Yeah.
You know, here's your opportunity, right? It's been 20 years since this happened. Tell her. So I told her. And when I told her, I broke down into tears, right? And I just cried.
Yep.
And I let myself feel vulnerable.
Yep.
And I swore to myself, I said, I will never, ever tell another person.
Yeah, never do it again.
Yep. Never do it again, right? And then she looked at me and she said, I'm so sorry that happened to you. She said, I wish that I could do something to take that away from you. And then she shared her experiences with me from her childhood. And we just kind of started sharing back and forth about things that we had seen, things we had been through, and validation, right?
Validation,
and
there it is.
It was that validation, and it made me feel amazing. And still, I said, I will never tell another person. Right? I will never tell anybody else.
There's a stigma again.
Yeah. And that was when I was 25. And then when I was, let's see, I got out of the military in 2022. So I was 36 years old. I was almost 36 years old when I got released from the military. And then when I got released from the military, I was a medical separation because I hurt my back. Which you know about this.
Yeah, yeah, I know about that.
Just kind of preface this for everybody else. And then as I was getting out, I was like, man, I feel really anxious. I don't know what I'm going to do, yeah. Right? This is my career for the last 8.5 years, and I wanted to do this for the rest of my life, yeah. Right? I wanted to retire, right? I had all these big ambitions and these big aspirations to do more within what I was doing, and it just came to an abrupt halt. And I thought to myself, I have a family to feed, right? I don't know how I'm going to feed them, because I'm supposed to be the man, right? I'm supposed to be the breadwinner. I'm supposed to take control and come in here and just yep. dominate yep. this house and make it what it's supposed to be, right? I'm supposed to lift everybody up off this thing. So I'm freaking out, man. I'm all anxious. So I go to the doctor. He puts me on anxiety pills, which come to find out was just a really strong allergy pill, right? And the way it worked for anxiety was it kind of lulled you into a calm state, right? Because it made you yeah. tired, yeah. right? So I got on that, and then we got out, and it just progressively started getting worse and worse and worse. You know, when I came to work with you, you know, when I was there, I didn't feel like I was meeting my purpose, right? I didn't yes. feel like I was hitting my potential, and I felt like I was stuck, right? And you know, people looked at me and they were like, "Well, you're making good money." Okay,
yeah.
Right? Money solves all your problems. Money is the root of all evil. You can't have your cake and eat it too, right?
Pick one.
Yeah, pick one and go with it, right? But, you know, it's not about, and God, please, anybody listening, do not go home today and say, that's it. Yeah, I fucking quit my job. Yeah,
No.
It's work. It's supposed to feel like work. It doesn't matter. But what I'm saying is, I was in a rut. I went back to something that I knew that I was familiar with, but it's not where I wanted to go. So now with what I'm doing, I'm in a position now to where I do more of like what I did in the military, right? I work with safety and compliance stuff for DOT and OSHA. And, you know, when I was in the military, I was an 88 Mike, which is heavy equipment transporter. I was a truck driver. You know, so I did a lot of stuff related to the DOT and a lot of stuff related to safety. And I had to be in compliance with everything from the truck dispatches and, you know, all that. And now that I've found the job that I'm in now, I'm just so much happier. And I've just grown so much as a person.
And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing the difference that, you know, that your surroundings can make, right?
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of people say that, well, your surroundings aren't controlled by you, so you just got to suck it up, right? And that may be true to a point. There's not a lot of things that you can do about the things around you, but to your point, it starts within, right? Within. Yep. And you got to do a lot of soul searching. And you got to take what's within you, what you bring within yourself, and you got to project it to the world. Yes. Because selfishly, that makes you feel better.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And I would dare tell anybody with mental health issues, be selfish.
Yeah, be selfish.
Be fucking selfish, right?
Yeah.
Hold hold that hold yourself as high as you can on a pedestal. Because that is inherently going to make you feel better.
Yeah.
And it's the whole reason I've started this podcast.
And thanks for having me on again, by the way. But to your point, with the selfishness, I've heard a good phrase I've liked, which is self care isn't selfish. And by the way, I agree with it. But be selfish.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what they're saying, right? Is that it's that thing I was saying with the kindness that's come out. You kind yourself, and you can put it out, right? That's what that is. So be selfish for a bit, right? Get to where you need to be. And then you can spread, you light yourself on fire. I literally don't light yourself on fire, but you become a sun, right? And you're spraying this kindness everywhere because people can see it. You know, you can carry yourself up high. You know, you're walking with that strut. You know, because like I said, I want to be an author one day. I've got one work that's finished, one that I'm taking forever to work on. But like, that's the spark in my life, right? So like, same thing. Or where I'm working, and I'm just like, he puts money on the table, but it puts foot on the table. You know, that's how I get my money. You know, but like, it's not like what I want to be. What I want to be is this author. And for a while there, and I really realized this after I started going to therapy, it hit me just the same way it hit you with what you were thinking. They say, I'm like, man, I got all these stories in my noggin. That's what I've always had story. I was in Young Authors when I was like six. I went to the Young Authors Conference, and I was like this little kid with my little book about rabbits. And there's all these big kids around me with their like little novels and stuff. And I'm just like looking around all intimidated, but I'm like, you know, I remember that. I'm like, yes, you know, I did that. But I have all these stories in my noggin. And a couple of years ago, to our earlier point about the people who had the stigma against me, I had a friend of mine who just couldn't take it. And he couldn't take that. I got angry. And I wasn't even angry when I did. But he started talking about it, you know, how I always do these things. And he started yelling at me. And so like that on the chat. And I was just like, okay. Even at the time, before I was even like starting on this road to recovery, starting on these roads, I was just like, okay, this isn't right. You know, I don't know what it wasn't right about it. But I was like, I'm not going to get angry about this because I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I did to make it mad this time. But I left. I left all the chats. I left all my friends. So I was for a year and a half there. I just had like no friend contact. Coming home, talking to my girlfriend a little bit, go to work, come back home, go to sleep. And then we stopped playing that game. We stopped playing any sort of dice game where I could tell these stories. Because I was always a DM, always the game master, always the dungeon master. And then we started back up 4, 5, 6 months ago, maybe, somewhere in the middle of summer. And I was just like, it was like much like the gas valve. Like, I started telling stories again. I was just like, oh, this was missing. Mm-hmm. This was a piece that was missing. Because just telling stories is an outlet, and that's how much like you, you wanted to do something impactful.
Yes.
You wanted to do what you used to do, and I'm like, okay, what I like to do is I like to see that I love it when people like, and then what happened next? I'm just like, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that just that's a drug, you know, that's just like I want it, and you know, but it's a healthy drug. So again, yes, it'd be selfish, and you know, that's what I'm working towards now, you know. You know, when I'm on the road recovery, I've still got my tablet laying up next to my bedside table. I'm like, okay, well, these days I'm going to have the constitution to pick it back up and then start just clacking at those keys again. But yeah, to your point, be selfish. And at the same time, the quote is self-care isn't selfish. But, you know, who cares if it is anyway? Just do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Get there first.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You get there and then you can start helping other people get there. And then once you help other people get there, again, be selfish, right? Yeah, help as many people as you can because it makes you feel better.
Yeah, and the scenario, the type of scenario that we're talking about here is, you know, if you're in a public place and then someone like I was at work with that guy, and someone just starts yelling at you, and you're just like, you know, you're just like, what did I do? You know, don't ever, you know, a lot of times I hear people say, well, I feel kind of bad. Don't. You didn't do anything. You didn't do anything. I mean, feel bad that he's in a bad spot or he or she is in a bad spot. And then maybe you can even help, but you can't help them if you're breaking down, if you're crying or you're, you know, all those. I'm not saying you can't do that. Obviously, if your emotions are that high, you find a healthy outlet for it. But in situations like that, be selfish. They start yelling at you, something like that. I didn't do anything.
Yes.
I didn't do anything. I don't know what you're mad at me for. And then you'd be like, hey, you know, I hope your day gets better. Hey, I think I even said something like that. Like, and that. And it's, I don't know if I did or not, but I think I vaguely remember going, hey man, I hope it gets better or something like that. And that's something I like to do whenever people, you know, get snippy at me. I'm like, okay, I hope it gets better. Customers, you know, a lot of times, you know, they'll be snippy with you. Right. And you know, they're like, you know, they'll be like, well, you know what I said, you know, they'll just something, some stupid little thing. And used to, my first instinct was, well, God, you know, go somewhere else, you know, do something else, you know. My first instinct is, okay, all right, well, hope your day gets better.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I can't know what they're going through, and they can't know what I'm going through, but only one side is right now is being the aggressor. Don't be another one.
Yes.
You know, just say, hey, okay, you know what, fine, whatever, okay. I'm not in a bad mood. You're not going to make me into a bad mood.
Yeah.
I'm listening to some music. I'm doing something. I'm not going to let you dictate how I feel.
Yes, exactly.
And used to it was not like that.
Yeah. Well, Sean, I would like to show my gratitude now. Thank you. You're my first interviewee on the show.
Hey, I'm honored. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, sir. I appreciate everything. Appreciate you opening up and sharing your experiences.
No, not a problem. And I hope I can be on here again.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll definitely have something else in the future coming up. So everybody listening, thank you for listening to this episode, Interview with Sean. The episode name is The Pen is Mightier Than the Stigma. That's Sean's choice. So just to let you guys know, I'm willing to do interviews. I'm willing to share your story. Just reach out, go to www.gingerveteranpod.com. Go down there to the contact us, reach out if you want to be in an interview, if you want to share your story. It's a pretty simple process that I'm still working on. Sean knows that. Luckily, Sean and I already had an established relationship, so I was able just to reach out to him personally and say, hey, man, I've been busy. Life has really tried to get a hold of me and keep me into a corner. So I was able to get a hold of him. So reach out to me, hit the contact us button. We'll get something set up, and we'll get you guys on the schedule. I want to share everybody's story. I want to be part of the solution, not the problem. And again, Sean, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes, sir. All right. See you guys next week.
Can I say something once real quick before we go, before we head off?
Yes.
Thank you all for listening, and you are worth it. Don't ever forget that.
Appreciate that, Sean. All right. You guys have a great day.
You did it again, Big Toe. Thank you.